Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Second hour of Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you here with us. I suppose among the most important things that people would like to know in this life, if we could have certainty about anything, we'd like to know how to make our marriage work. I mean, most people end up getting married. Not everyone ends up staying married. And even those who end up staying married don't always feel that the marriage is working. And if we had those skills, if we all had that answer of how to make it work, I think we'd be delighted to have that in our wheelhouse. If you would like to talk about making marriage work, give us a call this hour. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Our guest is Dr. Gregory Popchak, the founder and director of the Pastoral Solutions Institute, which provides a nationwide telephone counseling service to help Christians apply their faith to tough marriage, family, and personal problems. A psychotherapist and speaker, Dr. Popchak has authored more than a dozen books, including When Divorce is Not an Option, How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love. Dr. Gregory Popchak, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I didn't mention More to Life either, though, but we'll get to that.
That's right.
The radio program on EWTN, More to Life. What time? What hour in the morning?
10 a.m. Eastern, 9 Central. Lisa and I host that every day, Monday through Friday.
So 7 a.m. out here where we are.
Indeed. That's an early start to the day, but a good start to the day.
That's right. Yeah. So I would start with the title because I have been told that if both and you correct me if I'm wrong about this, but that if both partners in a marriage are dedicated to the idea that divorce is not an option, it actually is a help to the marriage just to have that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the research really shows that there are sort of two levels of commitment that couples have toward each other. The first level of commitment every couple has where there's a sort of an emotional commitment that they have to each other. But then beyond that, healthy couples have an additional commitment to the idea of being married itself, to the promises that they made to their spouse. So, you know, and it's that larger commitment, that decision that divorce is not an option for us, and it's not going to be an option. We're not going to put it on the table in the first place. That allows the healthiest couples to really work through the issues that other couples tend to be torn apart by. So that's really what the point of the title is. You know, it can seem a little intimidating to some people as well. You know, why is divorce not an option? What do you mean? Really, what it's all about is because you don't get married to get divorced. You know, nobody wakes up in the morning and when they're 8 years old and says, you know, someday I want to get married and then divorced. You know, it's not something we aspire to. It's something that happens. Sometimes it is a necessary evil. But it's something that we don't want and that we want to try to avoid whenever we can. So I wrote the book for those folks who were really committed to making their marriage work, even if they were going through some difficulties, and they wanted to know what separates couples who are in healthy relationships from those couples who are in struggling relationships. The good news is that it's really certain habits, certain skills that separate couples who are in healthy relationships from those who aren't. And any couple can learn how to practice those skills in their relationship.
I'm going to guess probably about eight of those habits, because chapter three is eight. What is it? Marriage-friendly. Eight marriage-friendly habits.
That's right.
Can you kind of clue us in on some of that? What are the eight marriage-friendly habits?
Well, sure. And you know, these habits include everything from things like self-regulation, which has to do with my ability to, to check my own emotional temperature and make sure that I'm thinking and responding to challenges and arguments and frustrations that I have with my spouse instead of reacting to those frustrations. Rituals of connection is another example of those habits. Rituals of connection help us realize that marriage isn't just an accessory that we acquire, but it's an activity that we actually have to give time and energy to. Things like emotional rapport and benevolence is another example of a habit where we're looking for little ways to take care of each other every single day in the relationship so that we're not just saving it all up for date night, if you will, but we're dating every day in little ways. A positive intention frame is another example where couples who are in happy relationships, you know, they step on each other's toes off just as often as couples in other relationships. In fact, something that people don't realize, couples in unhappy marriages fight as often as couples in happy marriages. And are about as good at solving their problems. The difference is that couples in happy marriages tend to try to give each other the benefit of the doubt and not assume that their spouse is out to get them, which also leads to this next habit, which is caretaking in conflict. Couples who are in happier marriages tend to do a better job of attending to each other, reassuring each other, encouraging each other through the tension and towards solutions in conflict, whereas unhappy couples tend to turn on each other and withdraw from each other in conflict. Other examples include things like mutual respect and accountability and boundaries. You know, to respect your spouse doesn't just mean being nice to them. It means trying to see the world through their eyes, which includes trying to appreciate the things that they appreciate, but also respect the boundaries. You know, when you're arguing and there are certain things that they don't like you to say or don't prefer that you approach them, you know, in a certain way, that even if it doesn't make sense to you, you respect that and you appreciate the fact that you're talking to that person. You want them to be able to receive your message. And reviewing and learning from mistakes is another good habit, being able to go back to an old argument without refighting that argument, but rather being able to talk about it in a way that allows us to learn from it and say, next time we're going to do better, right? Healthy couples are much better at that than unhappy couples. And then finally, getting good support. You know, couples who are in unhappy marriages, they tend to go for support to people who they know will agree with them and back up their biases. Oh, where yeah. Couples who are in happier marriages go to people who they respect, who have marriages that they admire, and who love both the husband and the wife and wish well for both of them. So they're more likely to give impartial advice.
888-318-7884, our number. Making marriage work is our topic. Dr. Gregory Popchak is our guest this hour. Loads and loads and loads of calls, actually, as we probably expect when we're talking about marriage. Are you comfortable going to the phones?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Let's talk with Alyssa in Seattle, Washington, listening on 1050 Sacred Heart Radio. Alyssa, your question for Dr. Popchak.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, my husband recently left our Catholic faith, and we are married in the church. We have two beautiful children baptized in the church and another on the way, and it's caused a great divide between us that has turned a happy marriage into one that has its struggles, and I'm struggling with how to remain an obedient and faithful wife while I feel like I can't allow my husband to be my spiritual leader if he has left our faith.
Can you tell me a little bit more, Alyssa, about kind of the nature of the relationship now? I mean, when you say it's a wedge coming between the two of you, how is that playing out? I mean, has he left the Catholic Church for another faith, or has he abandoned faith altogether?
He was rebaptized as an Eastern Orthodox a few months ago, and it was a long journey for him, but he really feels strongly compelled that that's where he belongs, and of course he feels that my place as his wife is by his side, and I am resistant to that, and so that causes a divide there because he feels that he should be the spiritual leader and that I should, you know, respect that and at least give credence to that in some way, and I really feel like I can't.
Well, I want to clarify one thing. You know, Ephesians says, defer to one another out of reverence for Christ. You know, Christ is the head of the home, and any headship that comes in a marriage that a husband has over his wife is dependent first upon the idea that both the husband and the wife are really working to serve Christ and the call that Christ has placed on their hearts. You're working hard to be faithful to that call of Christ on your heart to remain a Catholic. And he's trying to respond to the call that he feels God's placed in his heart to become Eastern Orthodox. And that's a difficult situation to negotiate, but it's not one that falls under that obedience issue. Because you're both following Christ and his job is to support you in your faith, just as it is your job to try to support him in his faith as best you can. You know, when there are religious differences, or let's put it this way, when there are religious differences that are causing conflict in marriage, it's very rarely about religion. It tends to be more about respect. We talk about this in When Divorce is Not an Option. What I mean by that is that when you respect your spouse, you try to see the things that are, well, you see, try to see the truth and the goodness and the beauty in the things they find true, good, and beautiful. And that can be hard to do when you don't share your faith. But what that means is that in couples that have religious differences, but they manage those differences well, they try to share whatever they can. They continue to pray together to whatever degree they can. They try to share in each other's traditions as much as they can. They try to join with as much as they can. And then they have honest discussions about their differences where they're respectful. They recognize that, you know, God is doing good things in your life and he is calling you into a deeper relationship with him in a different way than God is calling me, but I understand that, and I want to understand that better and share that with you as much as I can. When a couple has that kind of respect for each other and maturity, they're able to negotiate those differences. When they don't, that's when that issue becomes a problem. Here's the test for you. If you think about other areas of your relationship where you don't see eye to eye, but you're not willing to give in, I'm going to guess that there's a similar dynamic there as well. That the religious issue is more intense because you're not willing to give in on that. But on other things where you don't see eye to eye, there's a sort of expectation that you're supposed to kind of cave, and so you do, and it becomes less of an issue. That is usually the hallmark of what I'm talking about, where there's that failure of respect. If you find that you're always the one who's giving in on every other area except this one, chances are this is not about religion, but rather that deeper issue of respect in the relationship, and I'd really encourage you to seek some professional help for that.
Alyssa, I have to say thank you for that call because we have to go to a break. Dr. Gregory Pupchek is our guest. When Divorce is Not an Option, How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love is his book. Making Marriage Work is our topic, and we'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Face it, it's tempting and easy to be a man of the world. Father Terence Ehrman has a challenge for you. Be a man of God instead. In his new book, Man of God, Father Ehrman draws on his experience counseling men who are struggling to live in the world but not be of the world. In a unique, easy-to-read format, he offers holy spiritual direction for all men who want to master themselves and be transformed from within. Order your copy of Man of God today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. This hour, we're talking about making marriage work. Our number, 888-31-TRUTH. Making marriage work, 888-318-7884. Dr. Gregory Pupchek, the author of many books, including When Divorce is Not an Option, is our guest. And we would be very happy to take your call this hour. Mary in Williamsville, New York, is next. She's listening on the Catholic Answers app. Mary, your question for Dr. Pupchek.
Hi, doctor. We've been married 20 years, but we've been separated for 10. And the reason is because he was violent that time. And we've been friendly all these years, for which I'm very grateful. We have a good, peaceful relationship, and we would help each other. And neither one of us has met anybody else. but I have heard that psychologically you shouldn't go back with someone who has been an abuser, even though they say they're not going to do it again, if they're untreated. He never got treated for it.
Is he willing to now?
I haven't actually asked him that, but I'm afraid I might be tempted to take him back, and I'm afraid of that because I don't think, even though I do love him, I think I would not really have deep peace.
No, and I think that you know, first of all, God bless you for staying married despite these difficult circumstances all this time. I think that's a real witness to people of the indissolubility and the permanence of marriage, and I think that's taken some real courage on both of your parts, frankly. But you know, to love your husband, you say you love him, and to love your husband means to work for his good, right? And if you guys want to reconcile, and I really would love for the two of you to reconcile, you're probably going to need some professional help in doing it. You're going to need some professional help to be able to let go of the fear and to learn how to trust him again. He's going to need to learn how to make sure, one, to keep control of his temper, but also to be able to earn your trust back. You know, you've seen how you're able to be friends to one another and support one another living apart. But without new skills, when you're tripping over each other 24/7, it's going to be a little bit more challenging to negotiate all that. And your fear is going to come out in different ways, and that might trigger his anger. I think that there is definitely a good cause for reconciliation here, but I think that you definitely both need some skills to be able to pull this off. And I would suggest to you getting started on your own even first to be able to start sorting through some of the feelings that you have and getting the support that you need to set the appropriate boundaries you need to set to be able to say to your husband, listen, I love you and I want to make this reconciliation work. But in order to make it work well, I really need to see you being willing to do the work to learn those skills. And you see how he responds to that, right? If he says, you know what, Mary, you're worth that. I we've been avoiding it for all this time, but it's time for me to address that. You're right. Let's do something on that. Well, then, you know, you got a good guy there who's safe and he's willing to respect your boundaries and he's willing to kind of prove himself to you as you have every right to ask him to. If he gets angry and he says, that's ridiculous. That's 10 years ago. Why won't you just let it go? What's wrong with you? That's a guy who's not respecting your boundaries and who would get even more angry if you imposed more boundaries, which is a bad sign of the future of the relationship. So that's how you want to test the waters at this point. I really hope that he'll go for it because after all this time of your faithfulness, despite the difficulties that you've had, I believe with all my heart that God would want the two of you to be able to reconcile, but he wouldn't want you to do it in a way that would just cause the whole house to burn down in the process. If you're going to do it, let's do it right. So get the professional support you need to have the courage to tell your husband what you need from him, see how he responds to it, and take it step at a time from there.
Mary, how's that strike you?
That strikes me well, but when I went to CatholicCounselors.com, I sent an email. I never got an answer.
Well, yeah, tell you what, you give us a call, and you leave your contact information with the service, and somebody will be back to you within 1 to 2 days. And that's at 740-266-6461, 740-266-6461. Occasionally, emails get lost in the process there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mary, I apologize for that, but thank you for reaching out again.
Thank you very much, Mary, for that call. 888-318-7884, our number, Making Marriage Work, our topic today with Dr. Greg Popcheck. And we go now to Marcella in Point St. Lucie, Florida, listening on Ave Maria Radio, 107 FM. Marcella, your question for Dr. Popcheck.
Hi. We've been married for like 8 years, and we're having a conflict right now. And my question is similar to a caller before, how to obey to my husband, how to be obedient to my husband when I feel that he doesn't have the wisdom to guide our family.
Like, and why do you feel that, Marcella?
Because the conflict that we're having right now, the decision that he wants to make for our family, I don't think is the best decision. But I'm divided between, like, if I should go his direction or if I should, you know, pray more about it. And
are you guys praying together about it, Marcella?
Yes, but, you know, sometimes he's very stubborn. Like, he's stubborn his own ways. I don't know if he, you know, but I can try.
I'm sorry. Did you say that you are currently praying together about this issue, or you're not currently praying with each other?
I have been praying. I have been praying, not mm-hmm. together, but I have been praying by myself.
Mm-hmm. Would he pray with you?
Yes, but just like he's, you know, I fear that he. I don't know if he. I don't know. Sometimes he's stubborn in his, like, when he wants to do something, he's stubborn in his own thoughts. He doesn't have that sensibility of listening to God and what God wants from us.
Well, that's a problem. And so let me talk about this whole issue of obedience, okay? Because there's a lot of confusion on this, because honestly, in evangelical circles, they have a different sense of this idea of obedience than in Catholic circles, okay? So Catholics understand this concept a little bit differently. So let me talk about that, okay? St. Ambrose was reflecting on this idea that Jesus said, "You are my friends if you keep my commands." And he was confused by that because friends don't command friends. What was that about, right? How can you be a friend with somebody that you're commanding? Well, he recognized that Jesus was talking about a different kind of obedience, not a relationship between the commander and the commanded, but between two intimates, two people who know each other so well that they are working hard for each other's good, often without being told what they need to do, certainly without being told twice, right? There's this idea that there's this intimacy where I want to serve you and you want to serve me. It's what Pope St. John Paul the Great called mutual self-donation. And the Christian obedience, the Christian sense of obedience is rooted more in that sense of intimacy, not in do what I tell you to do or else, right? There's a blind obedience, which is that more do what I tell you to do or else kind of obedience. And then there's Christian obedience, which is I want to serve you and you want to serve me, and we are obedient to each other's needs and desires and wishes by working for each other's good. That's Christian obedience. Now, putting that in the context of marriage, as I was sharing with Alyssa earlier in the show, you know, Ephesians 5 talks about how husbands and wives defer to one another out of reverence for Christ. The Catholic understanding here is that Christ is the head of your home, and that there's going to be a natural kind of deference that flows out of a relationship where both the husband and the wife are subservient to God first. In fact, research even shows that in secular relationships where the husband and wife feel mutually cared for, there's a natural deference where the woman tends to defer to the husband more often. And that's just a natural thing that emerges when a woman and man feel cared for by one another. But when you're in a situation where you have a spouse who's going to be ruling by, you know, edict and saying, well, this is what we're going to do, and you're the wife, and so you have to obey me. Well, what's happening there is not Christian obedience, but he's setting himself up as an idol. And that frustration or that resistance you feel inside yourself is a God-given urge to not make your husband into an idol, but make God your God. So the reason I started by asking, are you guys praying together, is because I wanted to know if you were both willing to submit yourself before God and go to God and say, look, Lord, this is what I want, and this is what she wants, or this is what he wants, but help us know together what you want. And if your husband's not willing to do that, then what he's really asking you to do is to make him into an idol, and you can't obey him under those circumstances. We all have a first fealty to God, a first need to obey God. And then if we both, husband and wife, are doing that and actively seeking God's will, there's going to be a natural deference that falls out of that, because the wife is going to feel loved and cared for and understood, and so is the husband. And she's going to be willing to know that he's working for her good and that she can listen to him. In your situation, I'm not so sure that dynamic really exists right now. And so I think it's okay for you to insist that, honey, I know what I want and you know what you want, but we haven't gone to God to ask him together what he wants, and that's our next step. So, Marcelo, that's where I'd encourage you to go next. And then I'd encourage you also to pick up a copy of the book, When Divorce is Not an Option, How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love, to start identifying those next steps, including caretaking and conflict, so the two of you can learn how to nurture each other through your disagreement toward more respectful solutions.
Marcelo, thank you for the call. Dr. Gregory Popcheck is our guest this hour. He and his wife host More to Life on EWTN Radio each morning at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. out here on the West Coast. One of his books, among his many books, When Divorce is Not an Option, that book includes 8 marriage-friendly habits. Among the things that we are discussing today, our topic is making marriage work. 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-31-TRUTH. I think we will be able to take Ann's question in Fort Wayne, Indiana, but we may have to wait till the other side, Ann, to get the answer. Your question for Dr. Popchak.
Yes, hello. When I hear all these talks about marriage, it seems to me that it's always focusing on when both spouses are mentally healthy. And I'm just wondering, are there some solutions when one spouse is chronically mentally ill?
Are you speaking of your husband, Ann?
Yes.
And can you tell me what his diagnosis is?
Depression, anxiety.
And what kind of treatment is he receiving for that? Is he currently in treatment?
Oh, pardon?
Is he in treatment for that?
Yeah, he's seen therapists and psychiatrists for forever.
Is he in treatment now?
Yes, he is.
Oh, okay. And so, all right, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some other questions that I might have, but I have some things I can share with you about this.
And don't go anywhere. Please hang on. We want to address your question. 888-318-7884, our number, Making Marriage Work, our topic this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Dr. Gregory Popchak, our guest, and he'll be back in just a minute to address Ann's question about mental illness in the context of marriage.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. In a series of short, easy-to-read chapters, Trent covers the whole range of common topics, starting with why we believe in anything at all, and answering all the common objections to the Catholic faith, both doctrinal and moral. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Better yet, it's only $3 a copy when you order in bulk. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have a very hard time sometimes, and I'm so frustrated. I mean, frustrated. Somebody says, "How'd you do all this, Mother?" I say, "I didn't." And they look at me, "Huh?" The Lord did. God does everything. Without me, he said, "You do nothing."
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Dr. Gregory Popchak, our guest this hour. His book, When Divorce is Not an Option, and our topic, Making Marriage Work, this hour. When we went to the break, Ann in Fort Wayne, Indiana, who I believe is still with us listening on Redeemer Radio, asked about marriage when one spouse has serious mental illness.
And so one last, you said your husband's been in treatment on and off for pretty much your whole marriage, and that he's getting some help now. What role have you played in his treatment? Have you been allowed to attend his sessions as well?
I have. We're separated now, so I don't attend as much, but yeah,
so
I
have. So what can I help you with today? Now that you're separated, what are you looking for exactly from the call today?
Well, I would like for us to not be separated, that
sure.
There would be a possibility for us to get back together again, but I don't see, it's just too difficult to live with him.
I understand.
With the depression and anxiety.
Well, let's talk about this. So to love somebody, as I mentioned earlier, right, means to work for their good, right? And when you're dealing with somebody who has a mental illness, then sometimes you have to be tough about the fact that they need to not just go to therapy or do their treatment or take their medication, but actually follow up on what the therapist is recommending that they do. And that there need to be some very clear kind of behavioral goals about, you know, that he is going to work very, very hard with the support of his therapist and any other support that he needs to get to do these things that are relationship healthy kinds of behaviors. And if he messes up because the depression or the anxiety is too difficult for him to fight off that day, for him to be able to own that responsibility for it, work through it with you. And come up with a plan with you and his therapist to be able to do better next time. So you have a right to expect that from him, and anybody who's living with a spouse with a chronic mental illness, you know, has a right to expect that from your spouse, because that's what it means to love your spouse, to want him to get better, to insist that he do the work that he's capable of doing to be mentally healthy, and to be accountable for those times when he's struggling too hard. You know, so there is a compassion. There's a need to stay with that person. There's a need to kind of stand by that person. But how close you can stand to that person and whether you can be under the same roof even with that person is largely dependent upon their willingness to be good stewards of their own mental health. And what I'm hearing you say, Anne, right now, is that your husband isn't, that his behavior is either too erratic or he's not participating in his treatment actively enough, that he is safe to be around at this time. And so you've had to set up some boundaries that are kind of keeping you from being sucked down into the void with him in his depression, which is a very, very sad place to be. What I would suggest to you is maybe working with his therapist to identify what are those things that you would need to see from him in order to know whether you could trust him or not enough to be able to move back in with him and share a roof together, so that you were being proactive about it. Because this is something that's too difficult for you to sort of figure out on your own, because all you got are the occasional phone calls, or you see each other once in a while, and he's maybe on his best behavior, or it's hard to know, right? So if you're working to come with his therapist to actually identify a specific plan for what you guys would all need to be working together on to reconcile, I think that would be your best next step.
Okay, Anne?
I appreciate that. Thank you.
God bless you, Anne. Thanks for the call. But yeah, really, loving him means holding him accountable for working his treatment plan and really doing what he needs to do to be as healthy as he possibly can. God put you there to play that supportive role, and don't be afraid, and up to and including setting boundaries like you have here. So, you know, you keep going on the right track.
Thank you again. And making marriage work, our topic this hour, 888-31-TRUTH, our number. We go now to Eva in Dallas, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Eva, your question for Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Basically, how can I go about helping my husband understand that there is a trust issue in our relationship? I would not like for our marriage to end, but trust, I know, is one of the most important things in a marriage for it to.
When you say, how can I get my husband to understand that we have a trust issue? What's the nature of that trust issue exactly, Eva?
Well, a few years back, he had an affair, and out of the affair came another child. So there's a child outside of our marriage.
How have you guys tried to deal with that affair, Eva?
We've tried to talk about it, be involved in the child's life. And
have you got any kind of professional help, though, to put things back together here?
We haven't. I've
mentioned
to him. He's he doesn't, I've asked him, he's very not helping with trying to go get counseling.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Here's the problem, and this goes for you and for anybody else who's dealing with infidelity, okay? This is not, I mean, all right, I'm going to say, because there's always exceptions, that, you know, that 9 times out of 10 this is true, but I'll be honest with you, I've never met a case where it's not true in my professional career, okay, over 20 years doing this. But there's always exceptions to the rule. But here's the thing. When infidelity is not caused by marital problems. I mean, you know, that's not to say that there aren't problems, but it's not caused by that. There are lots of couples who have marital problems but don't cheat on each other. There's another factor there. And what is that factor? Well, generally speaking, the person who cheats is terrible dealing with conflict and not very good at expressing their emotions or needs. Does that sound familiar at all?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And what happens then is that person gets depressed, because they're not expressing their needs and they're not expressing their feelings, and they're trying to really like crazy to avoid conflict, and all that stuff gets stuffed down. Then they get depressed. Then they find somebody at the gym or at work or church even, or, you know, out in the community that makes them laugh and makes them feel good. And then they use that person to be as sort of a self-medication for that undiagnosed depression. And then they can get rid of that person. You know, maybe the affair is discovered, something happens, and then, okay, well, I'm ashamed now, so I'm going to break off that relationship. But if they don't get help to learn how to express their emotions and needs more directly, and if they don't get help learning how to manage conflict more directly, you really can't trust them, because it's all those qualities, those personal qualities, that set them up for this infidelity in the first place, because it was driven by that depression that they had that came from not being able to express themselves. Now, so you're saying I can't convince him to do it, and I think your mistake in that, Eva, is asking permission, right? If you had cancer, you wouldn't ask your husband permission to go to the oncologist, right? You would say, this is serious, and I've made an appointment, and I want you to come with me because I need your support. That's what I need you to do, Eva. You know, you it's not about asking because he's brought this cancer into your marriage, okay? And this is a guy who doesn't know how to deal with conflict in the first place, and now he's created the biggest conflict you guys could ever go through. He's not going to deal with that willingly. So the only way he's going to do it is if you make the appointment and you say, I'm going with you or without you, I'd sure love it if you came, because I know the therapist is going to want to hear your side too, and I would really like to work with you. So I expect you to be there. I've made the appointment. Now that takes guts, right? That takes you being that strong prophetic woman of God that you need to be to work for your husband's good and work for the good of your marriage. But don't be in that position where you go to your husband and say, oh, honey, do you think that we could use therapy? I think I'd really like to go. What do you think? He's going to say, no, I don't want to do that. And then you're going to be stuck, right? Because he doesn't want to face it. He doesn't deal with conflict to begin with, right? So my advice to you is pick up a book by Donald Baucom, B-A-U-C-O-M. It's not a Christian book, but it's an excellent research-based book called Getting Past the Affair. Start working through that together. But I would recommend that you contact a good marriage-friendly therapist in your area at marriagefriendlytherapists.com. Or if you can't find somebody there, contact us through the Pastoral Solutions Institute at catholiccounselors.com, because you guys really need some professional help to learn some new skills for relating to each other around this stuff.
Eva, thank you very, very much for that call. Making Marriage Work, our topic this hour. Dr. Gregory Popcheck, the author of When Divorce Is Not an Option, is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. And Vanessa in Irvine, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio, is our next guest. Vanessa, your question for Dr. Popcheck.
Yes, my question is, I don't know, the topic is kind of frustrating me and kind of making me depressed in a way, because I feel that I was married for 14 years. And, you know, I see a lot of couples out there struggling with trust, infidelity, all of these issues. And I got married very young, and I don't feel that God called me to marry my husband to begin with. So I didn't feel after 14 years and the abuse and almost losing my life that if God didn't call the marriage to be, why do you have to stay in a marriage that God did not even call you to be in to begin with? And to add to that, I know people... And I always say that if that's what God's ideal of marriage is, then I want to get rid of my religion. I want to get rid of everything, because I had a friend.
Can I ask you a quick follow-up question, Vanessa? Can I ask you a quick follow-up? First of all, just so I know how to answer your question, just a little bit of background. Are you Catholic?
No, I'm not. I'm Christian.
Oh, Well, okay, well, Catholics are Christian too, but I get what you're saying. You're Protestant, so let me put it. I'm coming at this from a Catholic perspective. All right, so that's number one. Number two, that's why Catholics have annulments, by the way, because an annulment is all about discerning with the Church that God did not call this couple into the marriage in the first place, or that this couple was not capable of entering into marriage as the Church defines it. The benefit of the Catholic perspective on this is that you don't have to figure that out for yourself. You know, you have the benefit of the Church's wisdom to kind of go to your pastor, to go to the bishop, and really discern together, you know, what did God call us to? Did God actually call us into this relationship, in which case we are committed to staying with each other, because what God has joined, no man can pull apart. But if we weren't capable of doing what God said that we needed to do in this marriage, or in some way there was some impediment to us having this relationship where God did not actually call us into this marriage, we can discern that together with the Church and walk away from that knowing that we have discerned that properly because we've gotten that counsel. And so for all the Catholics out there who are in the situation that Vanessa is describing, I really encourage you to go to your pastor and talk about annulment and talk about what that really means, and talk about discerning with the Church what the status of your relationship is, so you don't have to figure it all out by yourself and then hear something on a radio program that makes you feel guilty and miserable because you didn't have anybody to help you check your math.
Thank you.
Yep.
Very much.
God bless you, Vanessa. Thanks for the call.
Vanessa, thank you very much. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Gregory Popcheck, Making Marriage Work, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 18, when Jesus speaks of the innocence of children, he says, "Their angels in heaven always look upon the Father's face." He is speaking, of course, about their guardian angels. Talk of such angels can be found in early rabbinic writings. St. John also writes of St. Peter's angel in Acts 12:15. Though we are seldom aware of them, they guard us from physical harm and from spiritual harm as well. Their presence is a sign of God's love for us and for them. Since it is their love for us and for God that they serve us, they benefit as well. Love is like that. In loving us, they grow more loving themselves, as do we when we put ourselves out for one another. We can look forward to finally meeting them in heaven and learning how much their loving concern for us has helped us to join them before the face of God. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Making Marriage Work is our topic this hour. Dr. Gregory Popcheck, our guest, and we got a lot of calls, so we'll just try to work our way through them throughout the rest of this segment. We go now to Andrew in Cleveland, Ohio, listening on 1260 The Rock. Andrew, your question for Dr. Popcheck.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Happy to, Andrew.
Great. Perhaps a little bit ironic, my wife and I just celebrated our second anniversary a week ago.
Congratulations.
And thank you, appreciate that. And we're both raised in strong Catholic backgrounds, try to go to Mass every day, so on and so forth. So the first 2 years of our marriage, a lot of bad stuff happened. Like, kind of more than I think people are used to in a hurry. And because of all that,
can you give me some examples, maybe?
We got a growing family.
Just so I have some context here, can you give me a little bit of, give me some examples of what you mean?
Yeah, okay, I'll just rain them down on you. The day after we were married, her sister decided to reveal to us that she got an abortion, and that kind of, like, put a hole right in our hearts. My mother passed away with, like, pretty soon after we were married, and that put a hole on my side of the family, and she was a stone of faith and the cornerstone of faith in our family. Terrible sickness, like, I've had back surgeries and stomach issues and incredible fatigue, and, like, and I'm just, like, starting, right? Tons of terrible things, and, like, we spent a lot of time in our first 2 years of marriage crying and being sad and praying together. And as you can expect, like, intimacy has taken a hit. It's been really, like, just challenging just being and existing and hurting. And we're very, like, you know, we're asking God for help. But, like, doing simple things together is, like, really hard. Like, having basic intimacy, going out to dinner. And, like, how do we start this healing process when we feel like, since we've been married, we like to joke to each other. It's like we feel like, Satan himself, like, came raining down on us right after.
Can I tell you? Let me. I'm actually glad you said that, because I was going to, and I didn't know how you'd take it. So here, let me share something personally. As I have such sympathy for your situation, empathy for you, because honestly, I mean, the circumstances are different, and you can't compare. But you sound like me and my wife in the first couple of years of our marriage. Honestly, I mean, it was life-threatening illness, two car accidents that destroyed our cars. I got sick that caused me to lose my job. It was constant financial. Oh my gosh, we actually talk about this in our book, Just Married: The Catholic Guide to Surviving and Thriving in the First 5 Years of Marriage, and we kind of describe how, you know, if you had a checklist of all the things that you could go through that would wreck your relationship, we literally checked off every single one of them, right? I mean, we were too young, we had sickness, we had financial problems, our families didn't want us to be married. I mean, you name it, we went through it. It was horrible. So I completely understand. Again, circumstances are different. I'm not trying to compare my experience to yours, but I have so much sympathy for what you're going through right now. And my first impulse was, Andrew, God bless you. I believe that God has incredible plans for your relationship and that Satan doesn't want you to make it out of the gate. So hang in there, please. I'm going to give you, in terms of practical advice, here's one thing I'd suggest to you. In our book, For Better Forever, A Catholic Guide to Lifelong Marriage, we talk about doing an exercise called the Love List exercise. That's where you and your wife write down as many simple little things like, you know, I love when you give me a kiss before you leave the house instead of just saying I'll be back later, or I love when, you know, my favorite ice cream's in the fridge, or I love when you, hold my hand when we're taking a walk, whatever, little things like that, right? But you write down, each of you, 25 things that make you feel cherished, that make you on a gut level go, that was really nice. They didn't have to do that. You know, those kinds of things. And then you exchange those lists, right? And assuming that you're not talking about stuff that's, you know, immoral or demeaning in some way, which, you know, in most cases isn't. But it might be stuff that challenges you a little bit, but it's perfectly moral, perfectly licit, perfectly respectful. But you exchange those lists, and as long as everything's kosher on those lists, you do what you can to push past that comfort zone and love each other the way you need to be loved. You know, because you might look at some things on your spouse's list and say, oh, that's just not me. You know, that's just not what I like to do. Do that anyway. And find those little ways to reach out to each other and take care of each other in the everyday. Couples who are in the happiest relationships maintain a 20-to-1 ratio of positive to negative interactions. That doesn't mean they don't ever fight. Doesn't mean they don't ever step on each other's toes. What it does mean is they're really intentional about finding little ways of taking care of each other throughout the day. And this love list exercise helps to define what that really looks like. Because a lot of times in relationships, especially when we're going through an awful lot of stuff, we end up working really hard to love our spouse in ways that we want to be loved, but they're kind of meaningless to our spouse. So this love list exercise really helps us make sure that we're getting the most out of whatever effort we have to spend on the relationship, especially when you're stressed or sick or dealing with other kinds of problems as well. So number one, like I said, hang in there, because we've been there, and I believe with all of my heart that if you can remain faithful to each other and to God through all these trials, God has some pretty amazing things in store for your future. That's certainly what was true for Lisa and I. But practically speaking, do the love list exercise and check out Just Married, because we share our story in there and really talk about how, even when all the boxes are checked against you, how you can have a great relationship and really establish that foundation in the first 5 years. It'll keep you going strong for the next 50.
Andrew, thank you for that call. We're going to keep moving here, try to get as many folks as we can before the top of the hour. Maria in Corona, California, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Your question for Dr. Greg Popcheck.
Hi, yes. My question is, I've been married 26 years, and I'm happily married. My concern is that my spiritual direction and my growth and my husband's are kind of in two different directions. He goes to church with me on Sundays, but I want to grow more spiritually, and I want him to grow more spiritually with me and be the leader, and that's not happening. We're kind of in different directions.
So when you bring it up, Maria, what happens? Like when you say, honey, I want to pray with you, or I want to do X with you, or I want to study the Bible, what happens? How does he respond to that?
I mean, he'll say, you pray, or his thing is, you pray the way you want, and I'll pray the way I want. I believe in the way I want to believe in God, and you believe the way you want to believe in God. I can't get him to go to confession. We've been married 26 years, and he went to confession once because he had an annulment, and we got married through the church. But he doesn't feel he has to go to confession, and that's where I struggle, because he is a good man, but he wants to practice Catholicism the way he thinks he wants to practice it.
Okay, well, a couple of things here. I mean, first of all, again, when any time religion divides a couple, it's rarely about religion. It's almost always about respect. And the reason I'm bringing that up again is because what we're seeing here, okay, is a situation where your husband is struggling to try to see the truth and the goodness and the beauty and the things that you're saying are true and good and beautiful. You're saying, honey, look, this is something that means a lot to me. Now, he doesn't have to be on the same page, but in a marriage where there was more respect, he would say, look, that's not where I'm at, but I want to try to understand it. So fine, let's go to confession and we can talk about it. You know, I'm not going to love it. I'm not going to promise I'm going to go again, but I'm going to promise I'm going to go, and we'll talk about it and we'll kind of see and explore together, right? And step by step, we're going to see where we can go in this, because I love you, Maria, and I want to love the things that you love too. And so, you know, be patient with me, but we're going to, do you see what I'm saying? There's a difference there, right? If I was your husband and I was saying those kinds of things to you, you know, I wouldn't be just saying, well, how high do you want me to jump, Maria? And I'll just go do that. I'm not surrendering my concerns or my will here. I'm saying, look, I've got some concerns, and you would have to deal with those. But I also respect you enough to try to see the truth and the goodness and the beauty in these things you're bringing to me. Okay. And so what I'm going to say to you is twofold. Number one, reframe this as a respect issue, not a religion issue. And then go to other things that you'd share with him. You know, give examples. And maybe this is something you're going to want to work on as well, where you can say to your husband, look, I've really worked hard to try to appreciate this thing that you've brought to our relationship, or this thing that you've brought into my life, or this interest that you have, or this thing that you really are into. And it wasn't my thing, you know, but I really worked hard to try to appreciate it because I love you and I want to love the things you love. And now I'm bringing this thing to you and I'm asking you to share it with me. And I'd like you to approach it from that angle, not from the religion angle, but from the respect angle, and from a position of strength where you're able to witness. And if you haven't been doing this much yourself, start there, where you're able to witness your own generosity in the relationship by working very hard to try to share those things that he finds true and good and beautiful. But then using that, I don't mean this in a manipulative way, but I mean using that as sort of a life lesson, or what's the word I'm looking for? Just basically as an example, an illustration of what you're asking for from him, to be able to say, I want to be able to share these things with you, and you're pulling up roadblocks, and I really need us to get past that. Now, if you find that it's still not working at that point, then it's time for some professional help, because what's really going on is that he's putting up some very big walls to that respect that you won't be able to get through on your own and will require some professional assistance to break through. But those are the first couple of steps first, and we talk about this exact situation and when divorce is not an option, how to heal your marriage and nurture lasting love.
Maria, thank you very, very much for that call. 888-318-7884, our number. When divorce is not an option, how to heal your marriage and nurture lasting love is the book from Dr. Gregory Popcheck. Chapter 3 is the is the, well, what do I say? Chapter 3 is the, well, that's the one we kind of talked about today, 8 Marriage-Friendly Habits, Dr. Popchak. You said one of the toughest ones for people is to review and learn from their mistakes. That's the case?
Yeah, that one of the habits that, healthy couples practice is reviewing and learning from mistakes. And what that means is going back without refighting it, right? That's the challenge. Because most couples either want to ignore their arguments or they go back and refight their arguments and try to figure out who did what to who and how do we get past it. You're never going to agree on what happened. Even the happiest couple never agrees on what actually happened. The best thing you can do is agree neither of us likes what happened. And we can learn from that and do better next time. What do we need to do? And that's what we talk about in the book, how to make that happen.
Dr. Gregory Popchak, thanks a lot for being with us. Great hour.
You bet. And if folks would like to learn more, they can go to CatholicCounselors.com.
Or they can go to Sophia Institute Press to get the book, When Divorce is Not an Option, How to Heal Your Marriage and Nurture Lasting Love. Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum on Catholic Answers Live. Any question that you have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. I know it's a tough day today. Let's remember all those folks in Las Vegas in our prayers, all those who have died, all those who have been wounded, and all those who love them. Again, thank you again, Dr. Gregory Popchak. And for the listener, we'll see you again tomorrow, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.